continuing with our discussion of the nature of Christ, we are using Ezekiel 1 as a base, but that's not the whole thing. This is not just simply an analysis of Ezekiel 1, but that is rather a very basic footing to our understanding of just who Christ is. And I think that we have opened up some broader vistas of Christ than the simple what can you do for me perspective, which is sort of the plague of Christendom today, where one group tries to outdo the other in how much they can promise, very much like television commercials, you know, throwing in all kinds of bait to get people to come to Christ, ignoring the simple fact that you can't believe what you don't believe. Doesn't matter what threats or punishments you levy on people, they either believe it or they don't. If they join up because they're going to get a benefit, it hardly reflects faith, it reflects more opportunism. And of course, that's why people are constantly disheartened with Christendom or discouraged with Christ, because he's not coming through. They put their order in 8 weeks ago and it hasn't come yet, you see. So they're ready to call the Better Business Bureau on Jesus to see what the problem is. Or they may skulk away in guilt-ridden wretchedness and decide that they're not just his kind of people. Well, we've tried to lift you way beyond that. I'm frank to confess, there's a great deal about the interactions of Christians in this world that I do not understand. I can't always resolve the inequities and inconsistencies of this worldly scene. I can't resolve those, nor were we intended to resolve them. That's where I'm trying to lift you. I read recently a very extensive column on the subject of why Rios Montt was suddenly deposed from the presidency of Guatemala. And there was a great outcry over the fact that poor Mr. Montt was deposed because of his Christian stand, because of his attempt to institute morality in Guatemala, and they did not receive that and put him down. Well, the question I would have in the very first place is, if the Lord were interested in saving the world by its rulers, he would have had them all appointed by now in around the world as Christians. But politics and the spirit world never did mix. You can't legislate politics. John Calvin learned that in the 16th century. Nobody, of course, reads about John Calvin in the 16th century. But John Calvin was a governor, ruler of a canton in Switzerland, which included Geneva. And he tried the same thing there, and it didn't go over well at all. So in instituting Protestant Christianity and the Christian ethic in a country that is basically Roman Catholic is one of those flesh things, you see, that doesn't mix. Of course, the people that immediately heralded the coming of Montt as the hand of God redeeming Guatemala have now to take another look at it and say, well, did God put him in or not? I'm not altogether sure. If the Lord had put him there, maybe he would still be there. I don't say he shouldn't have been there. I can't even evaluate it. But it is one of those areas. All I'm using it for, whether one may agree with my evaluation or not, all I'm using it for is an illustration that when it comes to Christians interacting with the world scene, we've got problems, see? And you're not going to be able to work out a consistent, smooth orientation and understanding of everything in this world. We don't know why God does what he does. And I'm not going to judge God on the basis of the fleshly activities of this world, or of Christians themselves, for that matter, because not all Christians have functioned virtuously, you know. You may find some inconsistencies of Christian behavior, not to justify misbehavior, but only to say that we're really in a world that is totally skewed and perverse when we talk about the flesh. And how we survive in that world is in the spirit realm. And that's the area where we are trying to lift up Christ. What is he to us as spirits? I think most telling responses or thoughts about why God should care about us individually. Many people might justly say, might understandably say, well, what does God need me for? After all, let's say that over the history of Christendom, a couple of thousand years, God has accumulated 100 million people that are unquestionably on his side. Now, I realize that right today, as I'm talking to you, there are 1 billion Christians in the world so named. Theoretically, you should be able to number Christians in the hundreds of millions at least that God could claim as his own. I have no way to know what that figure ought to be, but let's just take 100 million. It's a very low figure. Now, what does he need me for in addition to the 100 million? That's a very viable question. The answer can only be valid in the spirit realm. As far as the flesh is concerned, the earth is less than a marble. As I told you once before, I think you may remember, let us assume that wall there, it's roughly a 9 foot or 10 foot square. Let us assume that is the diameter of the sun. Place a quarter at the baseboard, and that is the earth relative to the sun. Now assume the sun is a very small part of a vaster galaxy, you see. And there are many suns, larger than our sun, many solar systems, and many galaxies. Now taking it at the flesh level, and singing Jesus loves even me, it's tough to handle. Why should he care about a little ant on a tiny marble in outer space? In the flesh, nothing. But now go to the spirit realm. Go to the realm, let us say, in concrete physiological terms. Let us go to the concept of energy. Take the atom, which is itself submicroscopic. And let us go beyond that to the nucleus of the atom and to the neutron, which is the heart of the nucleus of the atom. And so the nucleus of an atom is measured by neutrons and protons, the number of each. When you have an uneven number in the nucleus of an atom, you have a free neutron. Otherwise, if there's an even number of protons and neutrons, they're locked in, you see. Now, the free neutron is the beginning point of nuclear fission, where the neutron, the free neutron, is released to bombard other atoms, other nuclei, and to start a chain reaction. The one free neutron, which is submicroscopic, but it has a critical place in the chain reaction of nuclear fission, to the point that a free neutron was the beginning of the chain reaction that destroyed Nagasaki, for example. Now when you go to that level, you see, and you say that we human beings are projections of the Spirit of God insofar as we have His Spirit in us. When you take the Spirit of Christ in you, you become part of Him. You are partakers of the divine nature. Not that we are all little gods. We'd be hard to sell anyway, especially to our families. But we are other than God. But we are part of the projection of His Spirit. So we are integrally connected to God. Now just assume that you, as a part of that Spirit of God, are therefore important to God. There is therefore a reason for your living, and He has projected His people in this world in ways that accomplish whatever His purposes are. But it's not because He needs numbers. And His ultimate reasons, as I've said to you many times, are beyond our ken, beyond our understanding. Now, our ability to even comprehend that, it's not too difficult to comprehend, our ability to grasp that, to even recognize it, is a divine given thing. It really begs the question, or it's an improper question, to even say whether or not you are important to God. That's a purely fleshly thing. It has no value whatever. Don't even ask a question. It's not a valid question. It's like saying, is my toe important or not? If it isn't, I think I'll cut it off. Well, long after you've cut it off, you may have found that it, after all, had been important. So don't even ask. But the point I'm making to you is, we don't know at all. We have no way to determine the exact value that we have to God. But the fact that we have value to God is evidenced by the fact that we are here and we know. We have touched God. That is to say, we know about God. Not because we've had grand religious experiences. Someone said to me in a conversation recently, well, is Christ real to you? Well, I said, yes, I have to say that. Well, he said, he's not real to me. I never felt him. Well, I said, that's a different question. If you want to ask me, do you feel Christ? I don't know. I can't even trust the feelings I have. You know, corporeal matters, much less spiritual matters. If you think, do I go about walking on air every day? The answer is no. I've got, my feet are too big to get off the ground. That may be my problem. Maybe that's why I'm not more ethereal in my discussions with you. I stay with my feet on the ground because I haven't ever been able to get them off the ground yet. I don't even ask the question whether Christ is real to me or not. You know, it's just a part of my life, an essential element. I don't feel my optic nerves at all. I don't even feel anything when I'm seeing. That's the same kind of question. Do you feel you have eyesight? No, I don't feel at all. But I see. Can you feel your optic nerves functioning? No. I don't get a single vibration. I don't feel it at all. But I'm hearing things. See? Do you feel Christ? Probably not. But he's there. Deeper than feeling. Deeper than feeling. Even though some of that may be repetitious, it helps to bridge the gap here in getting us off the ground. Quit standing before Jesus with your knapsack waiting for him to fill it. Do your own backpacking. No, he is not for that. Now, does he have the power to help us? Apparently. Does he do it? Yes. We have numbers of things that are quite remarkable in our lives that show that the Lord has given us some help, maybe sometimes quite a lot of help, and quite remarkable help. But if you try to equate that with spirituality, you're going to run into a great deal of difficulty. That's where most people lose the battle in bringing Christ to the attention of others in their so-called personal work homilies, where they try to package Jesus in three-layered promise boxes. He's far more than that. So when you are discussing Christ with people, if you try to point out that Jesus has got to be real because look what he did for Aunt Nellie, or look how he bailed out this country in the war at different times, you've got problems. You just have too many pockets of distress in the world to really play that kind of a game. Don't play that kind of game. You believe Christ because he is, and he has made known that he is by a communication with your spirit that has nothing to do with feeling. Now let me go a step further in this, risking repetition. As far as the emotions are concerned and your faith, when you look at emotions, you have to understand that the Spirit does not give you emotions. The Holy Spirit does not convey to you feelings of any kind. He's too real for that. Reality is beyond feelings. When you plug in your electric light, you don't say, I don't like you very much. You know, you just plug it in and it either lights or it doesn't light. It has nothing to do with whether you like it or not. Because energy is the real essence of this universe. It's not whether you like or dislike it, or whether it likes you or doesn't like you. By the same token, the Spirit of God, the essence, the Spirit of God, now I'm not saying God is energy and he's the source of it, but the Spirit of God is that functioning element that projects God to the world. In a sense, it's like divine energy. But the Spirit of God functions with you, just like you're in your physical body. The pituitary gland, we call it the hypophysis, but most people know it by the pituitary gland. little tiny thing about the size of the end of your finger, lodged up beyond the upper palate, hard palate, and attached to the hypothalamus, which is part of the midbrain, the essence, the center of your brain. So the pituitary gland is the energizing force or factor that turns on, I'm using purely lay terms here, but it activates the other glands of the body. It's the master gland. And it transmits signals that activate the thyroid through electrochemical processes, thyrotropic hormone. It activates the thyroid and in turn activates the adrenal glands and the gonads and so forth. But that pituitary gland activates the other glands of the body. You don't ask yourself whether it likes you or not. It does its work. Now, the statement God is love goes beyond the affection factor to say God likes you. I don't know that he doesn't like you, but whether he does or he doesn't, he cares. How much more could he demonstrate his caring than that he makes you part of him? I think that's about as good a demonstration of caring as anything we can figure, that he makes you an integral part of him. Not just an adopted, yes, in a way, but not just adopted. And certainly not an orphan in an orphanage. He has drawn you into the essence of his being, and therefore intimately cares. Now again, go back to the toe. That's a humble element, a humble digits in our mechanism. Think of yourself as a toe. The body recognizes the toe as an integral part of itself. The blood goes to the toe just as well as it goes to the heart or to the brain. The nerves go to the toe, as well as damage might change that picture, but generally, the nerves go to the toe. If you don't think so, just kick the nightstand some night. You'll find out the nerves go to the toe. Every member of the body is nourished by the system of the body, the physical functions, pulmonary, respiratory, etc. You're all one part. You cannot, just because you look at your feet and say, gee, they're sure ugly. Well, they are anyway, but no, most people don't realize that because you cover them up. But let us assume that you look at your feet one day and you say, boy, that's sure an ugly foot. I don't even like my big toe because it sure looks ugly to me. I dropped a hand truck on one about 25 years ago. It still looks a little ugly, that toe. Now you're not going to say, well, I don't like the toe. Today I'm going to shut off the blood supply to it. That's human thinking, to say God doesn't like me, so he's not going to feed me today, or he's not going to answer my prayers today because he doesn't like me. Well, I'm not going to argue whether you're ugly or not. I could get in a lot of trouble about that. But I don't think, maybe our behavior gets a little ugly sometimes. You may know people, nobody here, but you know other people whose behavior some days is ugly, right? And you think, gee, you're sure an ugly person. You act so ugly today. Now that's the level of human feeling and emotion and interaction. Yet, unfortunately, that's the level on which Christ is usually presented to us. And we sing the little songs in Sunday school, Jesus loves the little children and so forth. And all they get out of it is, well, if he loves me, better give me an ice cream cone today, see? Because they measure, kiddies measure that. I don't know if we can, you know, we're restricted by certain language elements. But we ought to understand what I'm saying to you, that the meaning of Jesus Christ is so far greater than this penny-ante little world of feelings, good, bad, or indifference. A more fundamental thing I'm trying to say to you is this. The spirit comes to you in reality the same way that energy comes to that fan. It has nothing to do with feelings. It comes and activates the fan, and action takes place. We ask for the spirit to come to us, and he comes to us, and action takes place. that interacts with God. Now you may say, well, that you see something from the fan or you feel something of air moving. Well, what you get from God is that you turn on to God. That is to say, you suddenly know about Him, accept Him, acknowledge Him. That's the reaction. There are a lot of things where the fan is a physical energy factor that you can see, but there are a lot of things that you wouldn't be able to see. If it were a cold day and we turned on the furnace, you wouldn't be able to see that, but the warmth would be there. You could feel that in a certain physical sense. But there are a lot of things that just happen, whether you can see them or feel them or not, as a result of energy flowing. The Spirit touches us, and the thing that we, that is the action, the reaction to that, is what brings us here today. It's the caring about Christ, not in the sense of feeling good about Him, but in the sense of being united to Him, where feeling about Him is incidental. The difference in response to the Spirit is as varied as people that respond. In simple ways, I can say that the fan responds to the energy of electricity by revolving and giving off air. I'm not going to say a lot of people give off hot air, but that might be an analogy. When they get saved, a lot of people just give off a lot of hot air. They run around trying to make converts out of everybody, which theoretically should seem nice, but a lot of times that's merely a human reaction and not a spirit reaction. You don't need to say that because one person reacts to this by running around telling everybody about it, that they're more Christian than the person who reacts in quieter ways. See? Now, in terms of feelings, some people react to feelings, everybody reacts differently to feelings, but when people react with enthusiasm to a certain thing, that's part of their natural psyche. So, for example, you go to a football game or baseball game, and the truth comes out that somebody has made a touchdown. That's truth. What happens in the grandstands depends on the people there. And some people shout, and some throw their hat in the air, and some throw bottles, and some jump up and down on the seat. But it all depends on what their psyche is. When one learns that Christ has in fact brought about salvation, or that His Spirit has entered our spirits, or whatever you want to say, some people react by great emotional expressions. Some people react without too much enthusiasm. They just accept it. They're glad of it, but they accept it, and they may build their life on that truth. But they don't have any emotional reactions. So what I'm saying to you is the Spirit gives no emotions. The Spirit gives truth and reality. The human psyche is what reacts in emotions. And therefore, I cannot say emotions are good or bad. There just is. Emotions are there. And you react one way or another. Now you see, if you're brought to Christ in a group that specializes in emotional reactions, you may get into the swing of it and do that yourself. See? It's like some people who are normally fairly quiet souls will go to a ball game, and because everybody else around them is shouting, they'll shout too. They feel uninhibited, but it's not their normal nature. Much a part of the Spirit of God that even to ask the question whether He cares or not is out of order. We don't even know how to describe how He feels or how He reacts. We don't know that. We use anthropomorphic terms. Bible says God is love. And immediately we put our human twist to that. What does love mean? Well, it means giving out lollipops and whatnot, see? But that's not what God means by it. God is love in the sense that the whole issue of human caring, of human oneness with God, is based upon the power of God communicating with us. So you are integrally a part of the Spirit of God, therefore indestructible, imperishable, eternal. Doesn't matter whether we rescue Guatemala or not, as far as the functions of God and the Spirit are concerned. Now, if you have a love for Guatemala, don't say I don't like Guatemalans. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't know whether in God's economy that's a priority or not in God's economy, any more than to rescue the United States or anybody else, see? God is functioning at the spirit level and accomplishing things in our lives and in our world that are in accordance with His purposes. Now, individual behavior, on the other hand, is another subject. Now we apply it realistically to the fact that, well, after all, we do get out of bed in the morning when that wretched alarm rings, or we are supposed to, and we pad around our house and get breakfast, and we go off to work, and we do our job, and we come home and watch television, whatever we do. And that's the real world. See, we're inclined to say, look, that's the real world. Don't talk to me about all this gobbledygook of spirit. I live in a real world. And I have to say to you, fine. The real world has to be lived in correctly, or you're going to stub your toe. If you stub your toe, don't blame God. What you get to help you with the real world is a grasp of the spirit that says to you, you are more than an animal, so don't live as an animal. You know, if you want to bark like a dog, the Humane Society may come around with their truck. See what I mean? You're going to get treated like an animal if you act like an animal. Now that has nothing to do with the fact that God steers you to act not like a dog. It has to do with whether you value yourself as a dog or as a part of God. If you value yourself as part of the Spirit of God, you're going to function on the earth with that kind of knowledge. And you're going to behave yourself because you don't want to be an animal. But if you do act like an animal, it's not going to say that you are no longer a Christian. It's only not that animal has many, many implications. Whatever we do that is strictly earth-oriented can throw us into the animal context. And I'm saying you behave in ways that the spirit in you has oriented you to. That is to say, understanding that you are a spirit being, you behave on the earth in ways that are commensurate with that. But you also have enough sense, because of the Spirit in you, you have enough sense to know that behaving simply in terms of this fleshly world is not the ultimate meaning of your life. And you have to be wary of it, and you have to look at the consequences of your conduct. Other than that, I don't have any spiritualizations for you. I can't say to you, if you were really a Christian, you wouldn't do that. I can say if you're really a Christian, if you really have Christ in your spirit, you may know better, but you may do it anyway. I assume you know better. And that if you go ahead with it, you're going to be intelligent enough to recognize the consequences of it because of the Spirit of Christ in you. So that's what keeps balance in our earthly conduct. God has let us in on the meaning of mankind, I should say. God has let us in on the meaning of mankind, so we don't go about like a lot of psychologists today saying that we are only animals. See? The Spirit of God changes that and we know we're not animals, and that's why it's difficult for us to comfortably do things that are disrespectful to our person or to our position with God. It's difficult. We do it, but not without some sense that of discomfort about it. And that is the work of the Spirit in us. Well, I didn't intend to get down that road at all, but here we are. So understand only this, that the meaning of spirits is our unity with God. Our spirit is that force from God that is His projection in the universe. We are tied to that spirit that participate with Him in that spirit realm. And that's what gives us the meaning to our lives. And that is what gives eternality to our lives. But that does not necessarily give us special emotions or feelings. That gives us the truth to which our minds react with feelings. And that reaction will depend upon who we are and what our personality is like. Now, what I have said to you this morning may seem just a little bit, laboratory-oriented and not very consoling in that respect, but I want to say, go on with it, that remember that just as you are integrally involved in protecting yourself, so you can assume that God is integrally involved in sustaining you. Now, Paul says that men ought to love their wives as their own flesh. That's a very strong point. I urge it upon you, gentlemen, here. But some will say, I don't like me at all, so I guess I'm excused. Well, Paul didn't say you like you. He said you like your flesh. Someone says to me, I don't like myself at all. Fine, I want you to come in here. I'm going to have an experiment. Now, take your shoe off. And what I'm going to do is come down on your toe as hard as I can, and I want to see whether you like yourself or not, you know. If you hurt yourself, you may think you're a fool or rotten or anything else, but if you hurt yourself, you can go get treatment, right? Slice your finger, you can go put a Band-Aid on it. You're not going to just stand there and say, all right, I don't like you, just bleed to death. You may wish to exit from this life and do that, but generally speaking, whether you like yourself or not, you can take care of yourself. Now, that does not always mean pampering to a large degree. There are certain things that you're better off not to pamper too much. If you've got a trauma, an open wound on you, you dress it, but you don't cut all the air off of it. On the other hand, if you let air get to it, it's also going to be kind of vulnerable and exposed. I remember breaking my toe once. I wanted to go on working, you know, and I had the doctor put all kinds of casts on, and this one didn't work, and I had him put another one on it. I was doing landscape work then. He put all kinds of cages and bandages and everything on it, and still, it just wasn't functioning very well. Now, just as you are integrally a part of the care of your body, in that certain sense, so God in spirit cares about you, but he may let you get exposed to the elements. You may have an attitude he wants to check, so he lets you get a boot, so you'll think differently about it. He may let you get hurt because he wants you to quit acting like an anything. Not that he feels good about you, but because he's so integrally involved in your care as part of his spirit that he's going to do what he has to do. And that sometimes may involve us in unpleasant things. See, so I'm just saying to you, don't dismiss God as something up there in the air that doesn't care about you because you're part of his, just an energy thing. I don't mean that at all. You're so integrally a part of him that he goes on and does with you what he has to do, whether you squeal or not. So instead of putting a little placard on the wall that says, Jesus loves me, I'm trying to give you something that is more than that, something that ties you integrally to what is. The only reason, and the thing that really gives evidence that what I'm saying is right, is the very fact you came here today. The Spirit in you is what has activated the interest in the things of God. Whether you feel any good or not. So, time to quit.